Our speaker today is Kendra Nevin from Bozeman, a parent of three, and she's an engineer in the motorsports industry. She has worked with several LGBT support organizations around the state, including PFLAG, Montana Pride Network, Montana Gender Alliance, and the Rural Transgender Wellness Project. She is also a former member of Chicks with Sticks Drum Corps. So, welcome, Kendra. Thank you. This is a bigger crowd than I was anticipating. What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? I get by with a little help from my friends. I have friends in this room. I'm so happy to see you here, and I feel your support. Thank you for being here. Yes. As Ita said, I am an engineer, and so obviously this isn't my day job. And I don't know if you've ever heard an engineer speak before, but it's not particularly dynamic. I was just remembering as I was listening to the beautiful music everyone here is making, when I was a kid, my parents would drag me to a church that I hated. And as soon as I got home from church, I would rush to the TV so I could watch church. And my favorite program was Robert Schuller's Hour of Power in the Crystal Cathedral. And it was all so big and grander than life. And the music that they always sang there, I really appreciated the cadence of it and the melody. And the title was especially meaningful to me, and it was called Just As I Am. And it remains to this day one of my favorite songs of worship. The topic for today is just, is called, what are we calling it? To Thine Own Self Be True. Right. That wasn't a topic that I chose. The person that was supposed to be standing here chose that topic, and I agreed to try to follow it as well as I could. And how could I relate to that? Exactly. Because for the better part of my life, I was not true to my own self. But that song, Just As I Am, was always there. And when I finally, I think, became true to myself, the song changed for me a little bit. It was Just As I Am, finally. So, I am a trans woman, and I'm standing before you today not as an experienced public speaker or an authority on all things transgender, but I'm an individual who has lived a transgender experience. One time I've gone through this personal journey of transformation, and I'm going to share that with you. So here we go. So since coming out as transgender about 11 years ago, I've been involved in a lot of local LGBT organizations that help support people who are transgender, lesbian, gay, and bi. And, you know, I had to learn at a young age, to keep myself hidden away, because the world was different when I was young. And I knew how I felt from a very young age, and the way I thought that I would be received, or the way I was received whenever anything came out, I had to hide it away. So, excuse me. But when I finally came out, I had to learn to come out of my shell. I had to learn not only to advocate for myself, but for my community. And I had to do so fiercely. I wanted to make sure, you know, being involved with all these organizations, that, as I embarked on my own journey, that nobody else had to face it alone like I thought that I had to when I was younger. So it was through this involvement, you know, that I was forced to come out of my shell. I couldn't be a wallflower anymore. I had to speak before uncomfortably large groups of people sometimes. So, you know, after several years of doing this, you know, I've testified before the legislature, I've testified before city council meetings, I've sat on discussion panels, things like that. I've been on steering committees. Somebody sent me an invitation. There's a local group that puts on discussion topics, and usually they're hot topic issues. And what they wanted me to do, they sent me an invitation, and it basically read, you know, we're looking for a transgender person to give a 10-minute talk in our series of discussions about lifestyles that are provocative or taboo. And, you know, after all this time of advocating, I was kind of a little miffed about that. I didn't really like how they worded it. I was worried that they were going to use me as a sensationalist way to draw an audience that is curious to see this taboo creature. You know, I felt like it was going to be a spectacle. And after calming down a bit, you know, I realized that the intention was probably good. However unfortunate the wording in their program, and that I would participate in this. As an advocate, I thought, you know, I owed it to my community to set the record straight. But if they wanted taboo, if they wanted provocative, I was going to give it to them. So when I showed up to the event, I was dressed to the nines. Totally over-the-top drag queen style. I was giving them what I thought a lot of people might have expected to see. I was wearing a platinum blonde wig. There may be some people in this room that were actually there, I think, but we'll see. So I apologize to you for repeating this story. Platinum blonde wig. I was wearing gaudy makeup, you know, giant hoop earrings, a short dress with a slit up to here. And 6-inch stiletto heels. So there I stood, you know, all 6'6" of me. And as I progressed through my 10-minute presentation, I started to, you know, remove various pieces of my costume. And as I did this, I was telling a story about how when I was a child, I didn't realize I was really that different until I started being exposed to more children my age. And I realized through interacting with them more and more, you know, through kindergarten, early grade school, that I wasn't the same. And that difference affected how I was able to play and interact with my, you know, classmates and peers and playmates. I couldn't do everything with them I wanted to do. And then I went on to tell the audience, you know, that some of the other children even noticed this difference in me. And I got teased for it. I went on to describe as, you know, how I progressed through my adolescent and teen years. I'd basically given up over time and learned to live with it and accept it as an inevitable feature of just being me. And that it was something I probably couldn't change. By this time in my talk, my wig was off. My heels were kicked to the side. My makeup was washed away. This is when I started describing my late life transition. When I'd come to a point I couldn't go on without at least trying to resolve my situation. I told them about how I found understanding doctors willing to help, and even found a coach willing to guide me, even though we both agreed it was going to be a monumental undertaking. And then I told the audience that my big day had finally arrived. After, you know, all the right medical treatment and all that self-discipline and training, and having signed up and been accepted, as I was saying this, I was unbuttoning the front of my dress, provocatively. And And I whipped my dress open to reveal my running clothes underneath. And what I told them then was I stepped up to the starting line of the Bridger Ridge Run, which I had trained for all these years, which I got help from my doctors and had a coach, and the big event that I signed up and was accepted and finally look forward to doing. The point is that, you know, while I was telling the story, they all thought I was telling my story of gender transition, and I wasn't. That was a teachable moment I was trying to convey. If you substitute, I mean, every word that I said actually about that was identical. I found doctors, you know, I had this thing from the time I was born that caused me trouble in my life, and there was one big difference, though. Even though the stories were identical, you know, my battle with debilitating asthma growing up, and my battle with being transgender growing up, the only difference was that at the end, I overcame my asthma and I achieved this great goal, seemingly unattainable. And when I got to that point, you know, with my asthma, I was universally applauded. Everyone loved me for it. They thought it was great. But when I did the same with my gender transition, it wasn't so much. And that was the point I was trying to make. So you know, I was leading to something here. So, you know, having asthma growing up, it was all right. You know, it was scary sometimes. It was disheartening because I couldn't do everything I wanted to do. But the real big difference was is that, you know, everyone felt sorry for the asthmatic kid. You know, adults would always make compensation for me, you know, make allowances so that I could navigate life easier. But the difference was being transgender or having transgender feelings was a shameful thing. You know, I was taught it was shameful. You know, anytime I exhibited the slightest amount of girliness growing up, my peers, and I mean all of them, friends and foes alike, would make sure that I understood that wasn't acceptable. And so it forced me into a shell. It was nearly impenetrable. You know, as I grew up spending most of my time in my own head, because that was the only place I felt safe to be myself. So I learned to put on a brave face, though. And I became, through necessity, a fantastic actor. As a result, though, I felt constantly fake and alone. No one could ever like me. I thought the only thing that they could like about me was the character I was playing for them. So this is my spiritual journey. I guess this is where I get to my own self being, or being true to my own self. But it started very young. When I first realized I was not considered by others what I felt myself to be. Around that time, my longing would manifest in dreams. Often I would dream that I was a girl. I loved to dream. I spent most of my time trying to sleep so I could dream, because there, everything seemed right. I even sometimes had a recurring dream where I would arrive in heaven and God would say, "You're a girl now, and I'm sorry for the mistake." And I was raised religious, and as such, I believed everything that I was told about God. I believed he loved me so much, and he knew everything about me, so he knew my secret longing, and that he wanted the best for me. I also believed he answered prayer, and oh, did I pray. I prayed so much. and with the innocent faith of a child. This was the beginning of what I call my progression of prayer. And like I said, it started at a very young age. At first, because I believed God was magic and would actually magically fix things, I prayed that he make me a girl. I would pray hard every night and awake the next morning fully expecting that things would have changed and being disappointed every day that they didn't. And I always faulted myself for not praying hard enough or believing strong enough or that I wasn't a good enough child or person. The next step in my progression of prayer was when I got to be a little bit older and I'd heard people say that God doesn't make mistakes. It was then that my prayers changed. I thought I had this aha moment, like, you know, I realized that I was simply wrong for feeling the way I felt. In fact, how dare I question God's wisdom making me a boy? So my prayers changed. I started praying to God that he help me to be happy as a boy. This would become my chronic request for years to come. So the next prayer progression came when I was probably in my mid to late teens. And this had been going on for a long time now, all my life. By this time, my religious education was further advanced. I was confirmed in the Lutheran Church. I was an acolyte, and I studied the Bible and other religious texts thoroughly. I'd even considered going to seminary. By this time, I'd concluded that I'd been asking God to magically fix things for me when what he meant for me was for this to be my test, you know, my journey of spiritual growth. And it would be through that pursuit that my problem would resolve. Heaven helps those who help themselves, right? So my prayers changed again, and they became simple requests for guidance and wisdom, and that would be my constant refrain for decades to come. So in my quest to help myself, I decided that my path to beating my gender issues would involve pursuing the life that everyone expected of me, that I thought God expected of me. So, you know, I went to college. I established a career. I got a mortgage. And I started a family. It was through these things that I thought that, you know, I was going to get over this. I thought that by fully immersing myself in the minutiae of everyday life, that the problem would just fade away. And I would soon forget my gender issues. And besides, I only had to do this for, what, 80 years? To make it through life without bringing shame upon my family, myself, and remaining right with God. Well, friends, as a young person, with my whole life ahead of me, I grossly underestimated how long 80 years is. By the time I was 40, I'd done all the things I thought I was supposed to do. I'd prayed in earnest for decades, and my problems still plagued me. I looked ahead and couldn't imagine 40 years more. I wasn't suicidal, but I felt like a walking dead person. It all seemed so unfair. I did what I thought was right. I took care of my family. I tried to be a good friend. I avoided chemical dependencies. I even beat my asthma. But I could no longer bear the thought of my continued existence. And thus, the last prayer in my progression of prayer. Please, God, delete me. But, again, no answer. The day came when the risk to remain tight in the bud was more painful than the risk that it took to blossom. And that was a quote by Anais Nin, and I came upon it one day as I was pondering where I was going to go with my life. And I thought about that. I weighed it against my current reality, and I concluded that while I risked losing them, I was no good to anybody I loved in the state I was in. I decided to try the only thing I had avoided doing my whole life and through my entire progression of prayer, be me. So here it starts. To mine own self be true. As I told loved ones about my lifetime of longing and isolation, as I revealed the real me to them, I found that those who truly loved me stayed with me. As I came out of my shell, many close to me saw a happiness in me they didn't even realize could be there. And I made so many new friends. I wouldn't have dared even to speak to these people before, because I was that deep in my shell. So, you know, these are the benefits I was starting to feel. And there is a certain confidence that comes with living authentically that I never could have imagined before. Look at me now. I'm whole, I'm congruent, and I'm standing before a crowd of mostly strangers, loudly proclaiming, I'm here, I'm me. And now I can say to you, for what most of my life was unthinkable, it's great to be me. Mm.